Thank you for putting my wife's birthday in the bulletin. That saves me a lot of embarrassment later on this week. This week is our last day of school. I'm excited about it. The kids were in the room on Friday. We were together there, and I'm kind of giving them final instructions, and I'm kind of trying to waste time and finish the year up like a good teacher. And we're just in the final moments of class. And they say, "Mr. Weimers, are you coming back next year?" Well, I am, but I couldn't resist the opportunity. I said, no, I'm retiring this year. "You are?" I said, "Yeah, Wednesday after the end service is my retirement party." He said, "We didn't think you were that old." I said, "Oh yeah, I'm 65. Now, I do this to kids frequently, and I think it's my duty. And there's something that's to be said for teaching children to be discerning. And I'm standing there, and they're looking at me, and they can't believe I'm 65. But I keep telling them, I sure am. And it just happens a couple times, a teacher would walk in the room and say, "Isn't my retirement party Wednesday after the end service?" And, of course, the teachers right away, "Well, yeah, yeah." And the kids, let's see your driver's license. So I show them my driver's license, and right there's the date, April 4th, 1960. The date that I got my first driver's license. They say, "Isn't that your birth date?" I said, "No." I said, "Back then, they used to put on there the date that you received your license for the first time. So I got my license when I was 20, when I was in college, in 1960. They go, "Well, that means you're 65. I said, "Just like my driver's license says." And they go, "We're going to ask Zachary." I said, "Be careful, though, because he's very sensitive on how old his dad is. He may not tell you the truth." So by the end of the day, man, they had this huge, just searching out. And the important thing about that is it teaches kids to be discerning. And there's a reason I share that with you. One, because it's kind of funny and it's fun. But wisdom or truth is the same way. Just because someone can convince you of something, just because there's a good angle, doesn't mean it's the truth. And students need to learn that just because the teacher's up in front saying it doesn't mean you've got to write it down in your notebook and accept it. Even Mr. Weimers sometimes can lie. And as we look at Proverbs today, as we continue, this is the Word of God. This is the wisdom. And contrary to what you may have been taught or what you think or the way you live your life, you are responsible for this wisdom. And just because someone may present something to you or have a case that would argue against the words of Solomon, "Yeah, but what about this?" doesn't give you room or shouldn't give you an opportunity to abandon what is the truth. As we go through the scriptures, there's a thing about God's grace. There's something to be said for everything that we do before God is as filthy rags, and all our righteous deeds are worthless. It's only through the grace of Jesus Christ that we can even come to God. That is the truth. And that is talking about our position with God for salvation. But when we are on this earth living our lives, each of us has been given an opportunity to make decisions. We are responsible. And I know it's easy and it's fun sometimes to just concentrate on the grace of God. And whatever happens, happens, and it's God's will, we'll just go for the ride. But that is not what the book of Proverbs is saying. Understand me, you need to be balanced. Proverbs, in many places in the Bible, it talks about being balanced. And you get off too far on one side of things, you are going to become disillusioned, you're going to become confused, and things are not going to make sense. You are saved by grace. You can't achieve salvation by your own righteous deeds. But in your life, you are responsible to make decisions and to live a life based on the wisdom and the principles of God. If you violate the wisdom of God, if you violate the established laws of wisdom, you will suffer the consequences. Yes, but what about the grace of God? The grace of God cannot change truth. The grace of God sent Jesus Christ to the cross to die for your sins. You didn't deserve it. He died for you that you might be separated from your sin, that you may enter into a new life. But that did not put you into a magical world where reality doesn't exist. Truth is no longer a matter. What I do doesn't affect anything. God said in Genesis, He says it in the Bible, He began the law of sowing and reaping. And He says it's going to be here until the end of time. Not just out in the fields when you plant a seed, but in your life. What you do in your life is going to produce results. Yes, but I've been saved by faith in Jesus Christ. But you see, that was itself even a law of sowing and reaping. Jesus died that you might be saved. Now in your life, as you make decisions, these decisions are not going to determine your eternal destiny in the sense of being saved. It's going to determine how successful and how fruitful you are in this world. This world is based and built, as it says in chapter 8 of Proverbs, it is built on wisdom. It is built on the woman, wisdom, who was there in the beginning before time began. And since the world is built on wisdom, wisdom still has an effect on everything that happens today. And if you ignore wisdom, you're going to be ignoring opportunities for success. In Proverbs chapter 3, looking in verse 11, it says, "My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline, and do not resent His rebuke, because the Lord disciplines those He loves as a father the son He delights in." God loves you. God sent His Son to the cross to die for you. But in your life, you have to learn to think like God thinks. You need to learn and discover wisdom. And God is going to go out of His way to discipline you and lead you to wisdom. It says wisdom is crying out in the streets. It promises you here that God is going to go out of His way to make sure you learn wisdom. So obviously, my friends, talking to myself also, wisdom is something we don't just have because you were born, or because you were born again, or because you come to church. Wisdom is something that must be attained. It's there. It's absolute. But we, because of our nature, because of who we are, have to go out and discover wisdom. We have to find it, because there are things in life that make sense to me, but they're not true. I mean, in my world, it's like, this is what I think. But see, that's the world according to Galen. And Galen doesn't know everything. And so because of that, if I just stay with what I think is true and what I have convictions about and don't learn and embrace the Word of God, I'm going to be destined to make mistakes that are going to cost me either immediately or later in my life. And then I'll look back and I'll say, why is this happening to me? Well, the Bible says because you rejected wisdom. Now let's stop it very carefully. There are things in your life that happen because it is God's will that God is going to bring about in your life. It is not based on your behavior, your wisdom, and it has nothing to do with the devil. It is because God is doing something in your life, testing you, trying you, taking you to a different place. There are times in your life where disasters and things will happen because Satan will attack you. It is not anything you've done. It is because Satan is attacking. Those are all true. Sometimes things happen that God is doing. Sometimes Satan attacks. But my friends, it is also true that things are happening in your life. You are responsible because of decisions you've made. You are reaping that harvest. If it's in relationships with people, if it's in your finances, if it's in your family, if it's how you've raised your children, that is your actions. That is what you did. That's what you decided. And that's your result. It is your responsibility. Now, like I said before, sometimes things happen because of a satanic attack. Sometimes God leads us somewhere because He's trying to lead us into something or teach us something. But we cannot forget that there are things that happen in our life that are not God's will, are not what God planned, but they're a result of a decision that we've made. We are responsible, and that is what the book of Proverbs is talking about. It goes on in chapter 3, verse 13. Blessed is the man who finds wisdom, the man who gains understanding. Emphasis on the points right there. Finds and gains. You're blessed. Well, I'm blessed because I'm a believer. Yes, you are blessed because you're a believer. But you're going to also be blessed if you'll press on and you will find wisdom.
She is more precious than rubies, for she is more profitable than silver and yields better returns than gold. She is more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand, and her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are pleasant ways, and her paths are peace. Now, there are some things that all of us are trying to attain to in this natural life. We are looking for long life. We're looking for riches. We're looking for honor. We want pleasant ways, and we want peace in our homes and in our lives. Well, my friends, wisdom holds those things for you. She is a tree of life to those who embrace her. Those who lay hold of her will be blessed. By wisdom the Lord laid the earth's foundation. By understanding he set the heavens in place. By his knowledge the deeps were divided, and the clouds let drop their dew. My son, persevere. Preserve sound judgment and discernment. Do not let them out of your sight, for they are life to you and ornament to grace your neck. Then you will go on your way in safety, and your foot will not stumble. And it goes on and talks more about the benefits of wisdom. Go to Proverbs chapter 11, please. And now I'm going to give you my weekly warning for Proverbs. We are about to go through the book of Proverbs chapter 11 today. There are, I believe, 31 Proverbs right here. My friends, this is going to require concentration on your part. I'm sorry, church is not an entertainment organization. Many people have reduced church to entertainment. It is not a religious exercise. You come in here and you sit, and then God's going to bless you because you sat in this room. That's not what's going to happen. What happens in this room, besides prayer, worship, you coming in contact and having fellowship with God and other believers, is instructions in the Word of God. This is not going to just fall off the ceiling onto you. It's going to have to come through your concentration. I'm going to do the best I can. And Tony's been instructed to give me the boredom meter right here. She goes like this. This means this is getting boring, Galen. And this means, okay, you're doing fine. You're doing fine. Keep it right here. Steady right here on the positive side. That's what she's doing in the back right there, the boredom meter. So I'm going to try to do my part, but my friends, you need to do your part because this is your wisdom. This is your life. This is going to help you produce in your life. Some of these things will be offensive to you. It's like, well, bless God, that's what I always do. Well, then change. Some of these things you say, well, I've never thought of that. Exactly. That's why we're reviewing it. And some of them are going to be common sense, which are right there, but they're going to be a reminder to you so that on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday this week, you're going to be thinking, aha, I need to continue to behave this way. I need to continue to act this way. I need to have these as my priorities. You've got some notes there, which I hope will be somewhat useful. We've got to fly through these, of course, to keep moving. Each of these we could just camp on and spend a lot of time, but we're already asking you to do a lot right here by concentrating for a whole chapter in the next few minutes. Hours. Proverbs chapter 11, number 1. We're just jumping right into it. The Lord abhors dishonest scales, but accurate weights are His delight. There are you talking about everything that is based, if it's measurement, if it's dealing with packaging products, if it's talking about justice, if it's talking about money, if it's talking about how much gas they say is in a gallon of gasoline. For example, you're going to put gasoline in your car. They can say that's a gallon, but actually make it a little bit smaller. That in that sense right here. When someone starts to mess with measurements, if they start to mess with standards, if it be righteousness, if it be money, if it be in packaging of something, they have now entered into the world of deception. And no one knows. Once you change the scales, no one knows what is absolute. And it gives the seller the advantage. It is dishonest. God abhors that. God hates that. And that it deals with in marketing, in packaging, in the world of economics, but also in your own life. You need to be honest and have integrity. What would happen in the ancient world, they would have scales. You know, they're going to weigh out grain. Give me, a pound of something. And that, of course, they wouldn't use pounds. That's an English measurement. And they'd take this weight and they'd say, they put it on this side of the scale, and then they'd put over here on this side the pound, right? And there's what you just purchased. But, you know, it'd be easy to take that scale and drill a hole in the bottom, or that weight and drill a hole in the bottom, or fill it up with something on the inside and make it hollow, and it makes just a little bit lighter. That means you can sell less and make just as much or end up making more money. Who's going to know? You don't run around and have your own scales and check out their scales. There are standards that are established, and if we're going to function in integrity, we've got to hold to those standards. God says himself, he abhors or hates dishonest scales, but accurate weights are his delight. In other words, If you want to have the Lord find delight in what you're doing, here's the promise, be honest. Be honest. Be fair. Even if it's to your disadvantage, be honest. And the Lord is going to delight in that. Now, here's your question. Do you want to make a little extra on the side here and have a little benefit? Or do you want the God of the universe looking down on you and delighting in you? Now, understand, we know we're saved by grace. We know we're children of God. But the Bible in the book of Proverbs, when someone asked me this the other night, I went through the book of Galatians the other night, just in a review real fast, pointing out that it is not based on law. Our relationship with God is based on faith in Jesus Christ. And you know, by the time I got them presenting, it's kind of like, we're not blessed by anything we do. We're blessed because of God's favor through Jesus Christ. And there's absolutely a truth in that. But as we go through Proverbs, the decisions you make and how God looks at you, you are His child, and you're in the family of God because of what Jesus Christ has done and your faith in Him. But as He looks at you as your father and you are living in His kingdom as His child, He is going to delight in you, or He's going to be very disappointed, even judge you because of what you do, what is in your heart. And this right here, do you want to have a little bit of advantage in the natural world for a moment? Or do you want the God of creation looking down on you and delighting in you? With the indication that if He delights in you, He's going to show favor. And in the long run, you will benefit because you've done what is right. The next one, 11 verse 2. When pride comes, then comes disgrace. But with humility comes wisdom. The word pride is suggestive of the Hebrew phrase which means boiling up. Meaning coming within a man's heart is pride. This pride is arrogance. This manifests itself in this way, that I already know everything. I have been there. I live there more than I want to live there. Especially as a Bible teacher, so what do you think? Well, I can tell you what I think, but you understand, I am not omniscient. I'm not omnipotent. There are so many things I do not know, so many things happening in your life that I don't understand. And for me to come in here and say, this is the absolute truth because this is what Galen sees and understands, that is arrogance. I can share my ideas. I can see certain things, but I have also realized that I know, great example, yesterday. I don't want to go through all the details because it would get monotonous. But we had to go to drop Zachary off at a Little League game. And so I took him up, good night, 7:15 on Saturday morning. Who needs this? So, well, I had to. So I drive Zachary up, and I took the certain road. And as I left, I came back, the ballpark was right on the certain road. I came back off this. He came on back on the interstate on the certain exit. And when Tony came up later, she was driving, and we came up later, I had misunderstood the road. I was so clear on what road I took. I took a different road up and came back on a different road, and I thought they were the same road. Yeah, okay, you understand. I'm getting confused in my mind. But I don't know I'm confused. I'm thinking that I understand this perfectly. And Tony takes a different exit. I said, that's not the right one. She says, this is the one I took last time. I said, this is not the one I took. It's not the one I told you to take. And she says, Gail, I know this is right. And in my mind, because I had misremembered, is that a phrase, misremembered? I was wrong. I sat there thinking, this is not, how come does she think this is right? And as I began to sit there and think, I didn't say anything rude. See, a little bit of wisdom. A patient man. a calm answer avoids a quarrel. I'm thinking, I'm getting mad. I'm starting to feel boring. It's like, you guys ever been there? It's like, don't tell me where to go. I know. But I thought, this isn't making sense. She is so wrong. And then I went back and I started thinking, now how come? And after about 5 minutes of thinking, it's like, oh, I know what I did. I'm talking about two different roads. I came in on one road, came back on another road. Anyway, it was so clear to me how in my mind something can be absolutely right, but so wrong. I mean, I had created this false world, put two roads together in my mind, they're two different roads. And that is an example, and thank God I didn't say something stupid, you know? Thank God I didn't like insult her or demonstrate my arrogance. I just thought, well, it's not worth it. We'll just see. She'll see I'm right. She'll see I'm right. All of a sudden, it's like, she's not going to see I'm right because I'm wrong. So, when pride comes, then comes disgrace. The thing about disgrace is that your arrogance will most likely be manifested publicly, disgracefully, and shamefully. That is the bad thing about pride and arrogance, is you're talking, you're shooting your mouth off, you're setting yourself up as an example, and when you're wrong, it's most likely public. And it's a very big embarrassment. It says right here, when pride comes, then comes disgrace. But with humility comes wisdom. Humility is that gentle spirit. It is used in, I've got it in your notes there, Malachi chapter 6, verse 8, where it says, to act justly. What does the Lord want us to do? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Humbly means the cooperative spirit. It doesn't mean getting pushed around. It doesn't mean always having to say, I'm wrong, I'll do it your way. It means the cooperative spirit, because there is a place where leadership has to stand up and say, no, this is what's right. But when you make that step, you need to make that step out of responsibility, not in arrogance or pride. The next verse right there. The integrity of the upright guides them, but the faithful are destroyed by their duplicity. Duplicity means to be perverted or to take the truth and twist it. In other words, the unfaithful are destroyed by their duplicity. The unfaithful are destroyed because they reject wisdom. Wisdom is there, truth is there, but they twist it so it fits with their perspective. That's not the way I want to do it, so they twist it there. Now, this is what my truth is. That truth, or that false truth, that perverted truth, is going to destroy the unfaithful. Unfaithful because they are not faithful to the truth. We want to be faithful to the Word of God. We want to be faithful to the wisdom that God has established. And you start twisting that, that perversion is going to be your destruction. This is good right here. I've got a little note written there. The integrity of the upright guides them. Integrity will guide you as you try to make choices and decisions in life. Integrity means to do what is right. And as you go through life and you try and make decisions, if you want a straight, simple path to follow, then when it comes time to make a decision, what's right? What is the correct, honorable thing to do? What is the best thing to say? Well, then say it. Just do what's right. And if you will do what's right, there may be difficulties. It may be easier to cheat or lie or manipulate or twist the truth. But it's going to make your life complicated. It's going to give you a twisting path. It's going to take you down through paths of with thistles and rocks and disaster and trouble. And if you'll just stay in the truth, it says right here, the integrity of the upright guides them. Which way should I go? Well, I am going to go the way that's right. Okay, well, I've made my decision. If you try and battle, which would give me the best advantage? Which would be the best way to manipulate the situation? Oh, man, that's getting twisted. You don't know what to do? What's right? Well, this is what's right. Well, then do that, and there's your decision. So in other words, it's sometimes easier to make decisions if you just decide to do what's right. Number four. Wealth is worthless in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. Many times the Bible warns us about trusting in wealth, trusting in the things that we think are powerful. In the day of wrath, and there are two days of wrath, just like in Ephesians, it talks about the day of evil. There are two days of evil or two days of wrath that come in everyone's life. There is that day or that time in your life where the day of judgment comes. It may be a situation. It may be the time that God calls you to account for decisions that you've been making. That's your day of judgment. It may be a day where Satan attacks. Could be a day of evil where it's like just you're going through life and boom, here's the day of testing. And it talks about standing in that day. Or it can talk about ultimately the day of wrath or the day of judgment when you stand before God to be evaluated either as an unbeliever or as a believer, depending on the two different times eschatologically. We've talked about that. As a believer, we'll be evaluated for our lives at the reward seat of Christ. As an unbeliever, you'll be judged and your name not found in the Lamb's Book of Life at the great white throne judgment. Two different times in history, two different judgments. But on that day of wrath, if it be in time or if it be ultimately, your wealth is worthless. If God is judging you, doesn't matter how much money you've got, how many possessions you have, how powerful you are, He is going to judge you. On the day of wrath, wealth is worthless. But listen, when God comes to judge you, be it in your life someday next week, He comes to just pass an evaluation or give you your test, your grade to see how you're doing as your spiritual maturity, or if it's ultimately in the end at the reward seat of Christ, it's not going to be your wealth that you're going to want to present. Look at how much money I got. It's going to be your righteousness. Your righteousness will deliver you from the day of wrath this week, or it's going to deliver you ultimately when you stand before God. And that means God will find favor with you if you can offer Him righteousness from your life instead of just a lot of production, a lot of money, a lot of power and prestige. That is worthless. That's not what he's looking for. What a shame to have yourself covered with wealth and power, but on the inside have no righteousness. He's going to look right past that wealth. We may be impressed with the wealth, but God is going to right past that right into the heart. But righteousness delivers from death. Number five, the righteousness of the blameless makes a straight way for them, but the wicked are brought down by their wickedness. Similar to one we've just read, the righteousness of the blameless makes a straight path. Just like the integrity guides them, your righteous deeds, if you live day by day righteous, the next day righteous, and you just spend months and years living righteously, you're laying for yourself a straight path. You know what you're going to do. You've got a straight history behind you. And what you're sowing in your life is going to help determine your direction, your momentum in your life. But you start weaving off the path of righteousness, as it says right here, the wicked are brought down by their own wickedness. Their own attempts of trying to manipulate things to go off the path. They are, you know, they're going too fast around the corners of life trying to get back on where they want to go. They're going down in dangerous places where they shouldn't be going. The roads are not built. They're just going to bring themselves disaster. The righteous will avoid many of the unnecessary detours of life that cause for winding, hilly, rocky roads. Now, again, this is what our goal is. In my life, and maybe in your life, you've taken some times where you have not lived righteously, or you've taken off the path a little bit. You've tried to manipulate. You've been deceptive in some way. I have been at different times. And what that produces in my life is a very complicated tension of winding and complication. And you look back, I just wish I would have done what was right a month ago or 6 weeks ago. Or whenever it was in your life, because that's going to help me out later on. It's easier, it's safer, it's more productive. Plus, you've got God's favor. He's looking down and blessing you because you are a child of His that is living in the right path. It's easier to live righteously. Now, again, maybe not right now, this moment, but the book of Proverbs is talking about your life because what you decide today is going to produce later on. And you say, well, that was pretty easy. That didn't cost me anything. Yeah, it's easy right now, but there's a harvest coming. Number seven, the wicked man dies and his hope perishes. All he expected from his power comes to nothing. Coming on the same idea here is a man of power, a man of wealth, thinks he's got something, and he hopes that I've got trust in all these things. But when he dies, in a moment, I mean in a stinking moment, everything changes. If you are trusting in your wealth and in your house and all the things you've got and you're surrounded by all these possessions, you are, as Jesus calls the man in the Gospels, you are a fool. Because in a moment, you die, you enter into another dimension and you see that your possessions are but dust on the earth, and your righteousness, your character, what you've done with your life, the fruit of your life is what's going to be measured in eternity. Righteousness will continue forever. And that's what it says right here. The wicked man dies and his hope perishes. All he expected from his power comes to nothing. The wicked man lived a life of deception. Now, I want possessions. I want material goods. I want my life to be prosperous. And the book of Proverbs, we just got done reading, that in wisdom's left hand, in her right hand is long life, in her left hand is riches and honor. Meaning you can have both. Ta-da! You can be righteous and have possessions. That is not, it's not a matter of, I'm not sure if I want to be righteous or have a lot of stuff. The book of Proverbs is saying if you live righteously and you make good decisions, wisdom has in her hand those riches you're looking for. But it's not your goal. It's just going to be a result of living in this earth in God's wisdom. The wicked man doesn't want righteousness. He doesn't want wisdom. He just wants the wealth. Now you can get wealth that way also. But the thing is, that wealth is worthless. In fact, all wealth is worthless. But you can get wealth in this age and also live righteously and have that righteousness will continue on forever. Everything the wicked man hoped for perishes, and what he thought was going to happen, he realizes there's nothing here that I've got. Number eight, the righteous man is rescued from trouble and it comes on the wicked instead. This is an interesting verse. I've got several notes written down there. The righteous man is rescued from trouble. Okay. We understand that. We see people rescued from trouble. We see Joseph rescued from trouble in the Bible. We see David rescued from trouble. But what you don't always notice is that this phrase right here, where it talks about it comes on the wicked instead, it's the concept of the atonement or the exchange. For example, the trouble that was supposed to come on Moses came on Pharaoh and his army. The trouble that was supposed to come on Daniel in the lion's den came on those who deceived and got him in that position. When King Agrippa wanted to cut off Peter's head, Peter was delivered from prison, and within a few weeks, King Agrippa, Herod Agrippa, was dead and was eaten alive by worms from the inside out. What he thought was going to be Peter's destruction, Peter was delivered, and the destruction came on Herod Agrippa instead. You can see the example. Nero cut off Paul's head, and in a few months later, Nero himself stabbed his own self and committed suicide. You see people being in a situation, but God redeems them, brings them out, and exchanges their situation for the wicked. We have a verse written down in Isaiah 43, which is interesting. God's people, the Israelites, were in Babylonian captivity. And he says it's time for them to be set free. The Persians are going to send them back to their land to rebuild the temple. And what it says in Isaiah chapter 43, verses 3 and 4, it says this, speaking to the Persians, "I give Egypt for your ransom, Cush and Seba in your stead." In other words, the Persians were going to let Israel go back home, but because Persia released the Israelites, they're going to be given dominion to go and crush three other nations. And he is going to exchange his people for three wicked nations. So the punishment or the judgment, the captivity, was taken off of Israel and given to someone else. The idea here is not just you're going to be delivered from trouble, but that trouble becomes a trap for those that have set it for you, and it will come on them. It may not happen right away, but God will deliver you, and those who are trying to bring disaster in your life, including Satan, that disaster that he planned, it's natural. It's a law. It's a law of God. Hear me? Wisdom is the foundation of the universe. And one of the parts of wisdom in this universe is when someone plans disaster for somebody else, that disaster, that person that is righteous, will be removed from the trap, and the person that planned it will be placed in the trap. That is a biblical principle. We see it many times. Count on it. The warning, don't do that to other people, because it'll come back on you. The encouragement, hold your steady course fast, because God will bring deliverance for you. Number 9, with his mouth the godless destroys his neighbor, but through knowledge the righteous escape. With his mouth means what he says. What comes out of your mouth are words. And this is so true in our society today. We have got people with bad philosophies, bad ideologies, bad religion. And they're talking, they're speaking, they're saying things, and they're lies, they're falsehoods. And because people are listening to them, they are going to be destroyed. It says here again, with his mouth, the godless destroys his neighbor. This is talking about teaching them, of taking his ideologies. They're standing out in the yard over the picket fence or talking. So, well, what do you think about this? Well, bless God, I'm an atheist. I think this, and I'm a humanist, and I think this. And that neighbor who is learning from his other neighbor who's spewing out all this falsehood, he hears it and accepts it. Well, that does make a lot of sense. Yeah, I think that's the way it is. And he takes himself right out of wisdom, and the neighbor is destroyed. In other words, bad ideas, bad theology, bad philosophy continues to spread from person to person. And a man that has got a bad teaching, with his mouth, the godless destroys his neighbor. But how can you escape this? How do you know? Right here. But through knowledge, the righteous escape. Now, I know this has happened to you somewhere where you're down at the store, you're at the post office, you're at someone's house, you're at a family reunion, and someone starts telling you the way it is. This is the way the world works. And you're thinking, well, man, you know, this guy's really confident. This person really knows a lot about life and the world. I guess that's true. But because you've come to church and you've gone through Proverbs, you've listened to the CDs, you've got knowledge. And because you've got some Bible knowledge, because you've studied the Word of God, you can hear and you can pick up ideas and say, wait, that's not true.
And you are delivered from that false ideology, from that false philosophy. You're delivered from having to live that way because you've got knowledge. In other words, the wicked man continues to spread his ideas, and people without knowledge accept, well, that makes a lot of sense. But people with knowledge, people with the Word of God, can reject and say, that's not the way the world works. That's not the truth. It's not better to lie. It's not better to be deceptive. It's not better to steal. It's better to do what's right. And you're delivered because of knowledge. Number 10, when the righteous prosper, the city rejoices. When the wicked perish, there are shouts of joy. Now, this is interesting because it comes along with the same ideas. We in our society, people want to have freedom to live wrong. They want to be allowed to be immoral. They do not want to have to do what's right. Now, that's what they want in their individual life. But even in our culture, which is declining rapidly, and I think we're at a time of revival right now, but we have declined rapidly over the last few years, we still want integrity where at? In leadership. Now, an American may say, I don't want to have integrity myself. I want to eat, drink, and be merry and just party and do what I want to do. But my leadership in my country, I want them to do what's right. Now, why is that? Even in our society, we realize that if the leaders are living immoral, if they have not got integrity, that's going to bring disaster on all of us. So you guys make sure integrity and protect us. Meanwhile, I want to live the way I want to live and be immoral. Even the wicked realize that we need righteous leadership. Even wicked people who don't know God want their leadership to be honest and have integrity. And so it says right here, when the righteous prosper, the city rejoices. When the wicked perish, there are shouts of joy. When someone who is a bad leader, an immoral leader, someone without integrity and is misleading a nation or misleading a corporation or misleading a church, when that person is removed and someone has replaced them that has integrity, it says there are shouts of joy. Because people know that righteousness is going to be the way of success, even in government. Number 11, though through the blessing of the upright, a city is exalted, but by the mouth of the wicked, it is destroyed. Same idea here. We're continuing on. Here's the mouth again. The mouth has now gone from being just over the picket fence, talking back and forth from neighbor to neighbor and spreading bad ideologies throughout the neighborhood and the communities. It's now in public office. Through the blessing of the upright, a city is exalted. So you've got now an upright person, a moral person, and a person that's living righteously is in leadership. The whole city is going to be exalted. The city is going to follow that example because of the decisions that are being made in leadership. But it says, but by the mouth of the wicked it is destroyed. If that neighbor who's sharing bad ideologies across the picket fence runs for office and gets in office, he's going to take his bad ideas right into public office. And now he's going to be able to broadcast them in speeches and across the news. And anytime he goes somewhere, he's going to be able to share his ideas. And those bad ideas, those things that are false philosophies, that are against the wisdom, which is the foundation of the world, are going to bring destruction and disaster on the city. When it says again, the blessings of the upright, a city is exalted. When an upright person shares wisdom as a leader, the whole city rises up in success. But here it says, by the mouth of the wicked, it is destroyed. And that is simply meaning that, again, he's sharing evil ideas and bad philosophies that are against the wisdom of God. That is very applicable right now today. And we could spin off right here and give you many examples, but many of the afternoon commentators cover all those examples. If you want to just tune into some radio stations, you can hear a lot of that. But nonetheless, the foundation of it is true. Number 12, a man who lacks judgment derides his neighbor, but a man of understanding holds his tongue. This is talking about backbiting, saying evil things about your neighbor. Understanding, be very careful. There is, again, is a balance. Paul talks about, I always have to point this out because people are so quick to just say, well, just don't judge anybody, just don't say anything bad. Paul is very quick and he says, mark those among you who cause divisions. There is a place where people enter into an area of being dangerous for a community. And it has to be brought, if it's a church or a community or a family, and things have to be pointed out. This person is making bad decisions. It has to be pointed out. That is not what this verse is talking about. This is talking about gossip. This is talking about
from your perspective, I feel this person needs to be brought down. Now remember what I said about my perspective or your perspective. You see a little bit. It's the whole idea of looking through a fence, through, you know, like they used to have the old wooden fences in baseball parks that had the knot hole gang. You know, they look through the little knot hole and try and watch the ball game, a baseball game, through a little hole in the fence. Well, usually you can see about what's in front. You can see the right fielder. But you can't see the rest of the diamond. You can't see what's going on. You're judging the entire game by what the right fielder does. That's all you can see. You're going to see, what, three outs in the whole game possibly and see him run on and off the field. But you don't know what the count is. You don't know who's batting. You don't even know what the score is. You may have some kind of an idea. That is what it's like judging your neighbor. You don't know the score. You don't see the whole ball game. Well, yes, I think I do. Right. You think you do because you know everything that you know. But that does not mean you know everything that there's available to be known. You understand that argument, remember? And that's the way my mind works. In my mind, I know everything that I know. And so according to Galen's world, I know everything. Because if I know it, that's all that can be known, is my perspective. I've got to remember, I've got to be humble and realize there's a whole lot of more information happening out there that I have no idea what's going on. So I need to remain humble, even humble towards my attitude towards my neighbor. I see this. But I'm not going to run around, or I shouldn't run around, and run people down based on my knowledge. Because there's a whole ball game going on that I will never see. And here it says again, a man who lacks judgment, or thinks he knows everything, derides his neighbor. But a man of understanding holds his tongue. It doesn't say the man of understanding doesn't have an opinion. It means the man of understanding understands he's just looking through a little hole in the fence, and I see what I see, but man, I don't know what's going on the rest of the ball field, so I'm not going to say anything. Now again, that does not mean people are never brought to account, because the Bible teaches that also, that people need to be judged and people who are living wickedly need to be pointed out as an example. This is talking merely about me running you down because of my perspective. My perspective is not complete. I have no idea what's going on. Number 13, a gossip betrays a confidence, but a trustworthy man keeps a secret. This is talking about someone who in confidence was told something. If it's in a counseling session or it's because of friends, there's been a confidence. They trust you. But it says, a gossip betrays a confidence, but a trustworthy man keeps a secret. There's a thing to be said. There's a thing to be shared. But certain things cannot be shared with other people. Not everybody needs to know everything you know. There are things that you know that I don't need to know. There are things that I know that you don't need to know. And that is because I'm in confidence. There's things that aren't any of your business. But here it says, again, a gossip is going to betray a confidence, and it's going to end up leading to a disaster. Going on for number 14. For the lack of guidance, a nation fails, but many advisors make victory sure. This is something throughout the Bible that we can see. I'm going to read that right here. It says, guidance comes from a word referring to the tackle of a ship, and so speaking of the handling and steering of the ship, or here the nation. So counsel, the word there on a ship refers to the tackle and all the things they use to guide the sails and steer and guide the ship. That word is now placed over onto a nation. There are certain tackle or certain sails or certain ropes and guidance that can be used for a nation. And that needs to be listened to. That needs to be gone through. Same thing with a church. Same thing with a family. You need to get the tackle. You need to get the things that are used to guide the ship, and you must get advice. Many advisors make victory sure. Now, there is a place in the Bible, once again, it talks about being misled because there are too many advisors. There's a place to get to where I know what I'm supposed to do. I've made my decision. I don't need to hear anything else. And you just need to be bold and go through it. There are people that got in trouble because, especially you get into Jeremiah and Isaiah, that they were not supposed to go out and counsel with all the other priests and prophets. No, guys, I've called you to bring this message. You either trust me and bring the message or go out there and be deceived by everybody else. There's a place to call the shot and go with it. This is talking here on the other side of it where there's a place to get guidance and balance from it. And so victory is assured for a nation when there are many counselors. That's one nice thing about our culture, our nation, is that we don't just have a dictatorship of someone just saying, this is the way we're going. There's freedom to express different ideas. Sometimes it becomes a nuisance, but of course there is a sure guide for that. And that's why they established our nation as they did. Number 15, he who puts up security for another will surely suffer, but whoever refuses to strike hands in pledge is safe. This is not talking about never co-signing or signing alone. This is talking about letting yourself, what this verse is talking about, is letting yourself get into a situation where two things. You don't have control of the money, and you don't know what the future is going to bring. You sign a piece of paper, it's almost like the blank check idea. Count me in. But you don't know what the result's going to be in the next month or two or three months. It could turn completely bad on you. And you can't say, well, I've only agreed to this much. This verse allows for a person to make an agreement that says, I'll agree to this amount of money for this amount of time. This is an open-end contract where you have no idea who's spending the money and how long it's going to be and what the future is going to bring. That says right there, and it talks earlier in the book of Proverbs about that, get out of that situation. Do not ever let yourself be in a position where you don't know the future and you're not in control of the money, because it can turn bad on you real quick. Now again, there's different when you've got a limit and you know how much money is being spent. Even the word right there, it says puts up security for another, it means any man. It doesn't mean, you know, a friend or someone you trust. Number 16, a kind-hearted woman gains respect, but a ruthless man gain only wealth. And there are two things you can gain. We're on the bottom of page 2 there. Two things it's talking about there. It talks about gaining respect and gaining only wealth. There are two ways to go to the top. You can go to the top by being kind-hearted, or you can go to the top by being ruthless. There are two ways to the top in this natural world. You can be kind-hearted and work with other people and consider others' needs before yourself, and you will go to the top. Or you can go the other way and be ruthless and only consider yourself. You can also climb to the top that way. And in the end, it seems, you're in the same position. But there's another level. There's another whole part of righteousness. It says, a kind-hearted woman gains respect. Meaning when she gets there, she has done it the right way. She's at the top. She's got the possessions, but she's also got the respect of people that she's helped along the way. A ruthless man, he'll get to the top, but the only thing he will have is the money. Let's turn the page. Number 17, we got three proverbs now talking about reaping consequences. Here you go, the consequences as a result of what you do. Number 17, a kind man benefits himself, but a cruel man brings trouble on himself. The word kind is the word hased, which means a steadfast love, the covenant kind of love that God has. Steadfast means it's always there. So a kind man who is treating others the same way all the time benefits himself, but a cruel man brings trouble on himself. This is saying very clearly the sowing and reaping. The way I treat others, the way I demonstrate love, not only benefits others, but it's going to come back on me. There's going to be a benefit. It's part of the foundation of the world, the part of the foundation of the universe. What I do to others is going to come back on me. Same thing here, wickedness. Those who are cruel, they're going to end up reaping the harvest. They may have an advantage there for a week or a month or a few years, but it's going to come back. The second of the three reaping consequences, number 18, the wicked man earns deceptive wages, but he who sows righteousness reaps a sure reward. So a man who earns deceptive wages, that would be dishonest or somehow he's gaining something, it's not going to last. It's not a sure reward. It's fleeting. It's momentary. You don't have the integrity. You don't have the integrity to earn it the right way. You do not have the integrity to keep it. You're going to lose it. The man who does it the correct way, because you earned it honestly, you've got the character to maintain it. It's going to be a sure, lasting reward. And number 19, the truly righteous man attains life, but he who pursues evil goes to his death. These three are talking about, number 17 is talking about relationships with other people in your dealings. Number 2 is talking about your character, how it's going to affect or not affect you. And number 19, your decisions today affecting your destiny. So it deals with relationships, character, and destiny. Number 20, the Lord detests men of perverse heart, but he delights in those whose ways are blameless. Two things, and I appreciate if you're still concentrating here. Two things. The perverse man talks about his heart, but the blameless man talks about his ways. So we're talking about one, a man who is perverse, again, someone that's twisted the truth, where? In his heart. And because he's twisted the truth in his heart, is going to produce twisted actions. Jesus says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. What you say, what you do, comes from your heart. And so it says right here, the perverse man, where is he perverse at? He's not just perverse in what he does and says, he's perverse in his heart. In his heart, he's twisted the truth. He's twisted a reality to fit what he wants to do. But God delights in those whose ways are blameless. Now we go the other way around. Whose ways are blameless. Well, if your ways are blameless and your words are blameless, then that means what? Your heart is blameless. It begins with the wicked man and says, if his heart is perverse, then obviously his ways are going to be perverse. And God, it says right here, he detests him. Well, meaning, just because a man does, well, maybe he did that, maybe he's not, and maybe he's a good guy in his heart. No, if he did that, he's got a bad heart. He's got something wrong. And God will judge the man, not just when he does it, but it goes way back here. He's judging it from the heart. He sees the heart. Jesus said this. He says, it's not just when you steal or you commit adultery. It's when it begins in the heart. He sees the heart. The heart is where it begins and it's going to manifest. Now, the other thing is true. If a person does something good, does something righteous, say, well, it just happened that way. That doesn't just happen. The reason they did something righteous, you trace it back, is because their heart is righteous. And here again, you've got this. God detests a man of a perverse heart, but he delights in those whose ways are blameless. Again, showing you the favor of God. God is working on the behalf of the blameless person. Maybe both these guys are saved by faith in the family of God, but one of them has got a perverse heart and is living and misapplying wisdom. God is against that person. Where over here, if you decide to live blamelessly because your heart is pure, God is going to show you favor. The book of Proverbs is based on that. Number 21, be sure of this. And the phrase be sure of this means hand to hand or a contract, two people shaking hands. Be sure of this. It's a contract. It's agreed. You can't change this. What he's about to say is absolutely true. Be sure of this. The wicked will not go unpunished. For those who are righteous, but those who are righteous will go free. Count on it. If you are living righteous, just keep on living. It's a law in the universe. Once again, the universe is built on the foundation of wisdom. And one of the principles, just like gravity, if I held something up and dropped it, how many times is it going to drop to the ground? Every time. Because gravity is a natural law. It's always going to work that way. There's another law that sometimes takes longer to occur that we cannot perceive naturally, but as sure as a contract between two people is an eternal agreement, hand to hand, this is true. The wicked will not go unpunished. They will be punished. And also, the righteous will go free. Now, if the righteous will go free, that must mean it appears that they are captive, or they are captured, or they're in bondage. You cannot live righteously and stay in bondage forever. You can't do it. If you're in bondage some way, somehow, if the key to your dismissal, the key to your release, is making right decisions. But I'm in bondage. I got to get out. Then start doing what's right, and that is your key to release. It's a guarantee. If you want to watch something fall, hold it up in the air, and gravity will pull it down every time. If you want to get out of bondage, then start living righteously, and you will be set free every time. It's going to happen. Your biblical example is Joseph. No one else could have had a more miserable experience than Joseph. Sold by his brothers into slavery. They thought he was dead, probably. By the time he got to Egypt, by the time they meet him, definitely. Sold into slavery. He goes into slavery and lives righteously, ends up being lied about, and ends up being a prisoner. So now he's a slave in prison. You thought it was bad being a slave. Now you're a slave in prison. So that's even worse there. But the thing that Joseph continued to do, Joseph continued. Thank you, son. Joseph continued to live righteously. And within 13 years, he went into captivity at the age of 17. By the time he was 30, He was taken out of prison and placed as the visor of Egypt. That would be the second command of Egypt. Now, he did righteous things for 13 years. He continued to maintain his integrity. If anyone's going to curse God, if anyone's going to say, I've already done what's right, I've been obeying, and it's just not working, Joseph would have said that. But Joseph knew the key to release from bondage was to continue to live righteously. And for 13 years, now how many of us are going to be sold into slavery and then put into prison, and for 13 years we would keep doing what's right? I would like to be able to be a man like that, but I'm afraid I would have some very, very sad moments in my life during that time. And at the end of 13 years, would I still be righteous? Joseph was. And after 13 years, his righteousness was the key that unlocked the prison door and took him to the place where he was. And understand this, Joseph died at the age of 110. He became the visor at the age of 30. That's 80 years. We feel sorry for Joseph, but understand, God took Joseph and after 13 years of bondage, gave him 80 years at the top of the kingdom. The top of the most powerful kingdom in the world at the time. Now, if we would sit down and do the math and we'd think about it and we had to make a choice, would you trade 13 years of bondage for 80 years, not just of 80 years of freedom, but 80 years of ruling the country, of being the most powerful, most prominent, most prestigious person on the earth, next to the Pharaoh himself, who just always asked your advice? I mean, in the mathematical equation, I would say, okay, let's do it. Now, I don't know if I'd say that after the first 10 minutes of captivity. You got 13 years to go. But that verse is true. Righteousness delivers a man. Be sure of this. But wickedness, you'll end up being punished. Number 22. Oh, this is a good one. Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman who shows no discretion. This is talking about two sides of a woman. Could be the same thing with a man, but they're using a woman right here. A gold ring in a pig's snout. The gold ring represents the outer beauty of a woman. And women are designed, it's biblical, women are created by God to be attractive to the man. A man looks at a woman and there's a beauty to it. It's biblical. It's not sinful. It's not ungodly. It's not a trap of Satan. God made Eve and gave her to Adam. And Adam was like pleased with what he saw. That's the way it is. But there's two sides to a woman. There's the outer side, which is perceived here as a gold ring, very beautiful, very valuable. And a woman's beauty is beautiful and is valuable. God made it that way. But the second part of a woman is, Peter writes about it, calls it the inward beauty. Here, the inward beauty is the pig, the 2,000-pound sow. Now, most men focus on the gold ring in the sow's nose. Woo, look at that gold ring. Yeah, look at the sow. The sow is the inner part of a woman. Now, this could go for men also, but Solomon addressed it to women, probably because he's writing to men. It talks about his son. Let's say, to my daughter, the daughter's obviously is applicable, but he's writing to his sons. Do not be deceived by the gold ring in the sow's nose. Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman who shows no discretion. What a waste. If you had a gold ring, would you go out and pin it in a pig's nose? And what's the pig going to do? He's going to root around the ground with his nose and with that gold ring in it. Now that is a beautiful woman with no inner beauty, with no discretion, without the character. We could spend some time looking at it right here. It talks about Titus, talks about it in second or 1 Peter, a beautiful woman is on the inside. Now, women, you can have both. It's just that, once again, you can live righteously and have prosperity. But you can also be a beautiful woman and have integrity. All beautiful women, oh, she's beautiful, she has no discretion. Not so. A woman is beautiful on the inside, and a woman is beautiful on the outside. It's just right here, what's the larger focus in this word picture? You've got the little ring, which is the outer beauty, and you've got the 2,000-pound pig, which is the inner beauty. Obviously, what's more important? and obviously inside the integrity. It's just, it says, it's a waste to see a beautiful woman who has not trained herself, spends more time on her hair. That's what Peter warns about in 1 Peter. Don't use your beauty just on outer garments and all the makeup and stuff. But the inner beauty, the inner side of the person is what needs to be developed. And it can be. And we could spend more time on that, but we're moving on quickly. Number 23, the desire of the righteous ends only in good, but the hope of the wicked will end in wrath. Talking there about it's simply that, you know, you have hopes, your desires. If a righteous man has a desire, that desire is a good thing. And when it comes to fruition, it's going to be positive. Where a wicked person has a desire, it is only going to end up negative. Number 24, one man gives freely yet gains. These are three proverbs now about giving. Contrary to many times in the natural world of how to get rich quick, these are three things right here that the universe, once again, is based on. Take it into consideration. The desire, one man gives freely, yet gains even more. They're comparing two people that have got money. One man has money and gives it away. Again, not squanders it, not just throws away, but knows where he's getting. He's giving it to things that he wants to promote. A righteous man is not going to give money to something that's immoral. He's going to give money to something that promotes righteousness. So that promotes his ideas of life. It's going to take and put righteousness into the lives of other people. That is, one man gives freely, yet gains even more. That man will give, but the universe is based on the principle that if you give money into righteous things that are promoting wisdom, guess what? She, wisdom, is going to give you a kickback. She's going to honor you by giving you more of what you gave away. It's just, again, like gravity. You give away money for righteous things, for wisdom. Wisdom is going to bring it back to you. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. Another person holds on to their money so they stay rich, but that attitude of not promoting and not doing what's right with the money is going to lead them into poverty. Number 25, a generous man will prosper. Now, a generous man is one who gives stuff away willingly, not foolishly, not squandering, but a generous man will prosper. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. So here's the context of who is the generous man giving stuff to. People who need refreshed, people who don't have something, people who are needy. He refreshes them. Wisdom says, I'll refresh you. And number 26, people curse the man who hoards grain, but blessings crowns him who is willing to sell. The image here is of a time of famine, and a man's harvested last year's crop. It's in his bins, and the price is climbing. People are willing, I will pay good money for that. I know. But if I wait another week, you're going to be hungrier, and you'll pay even more. So I'll sit on my grain and wait until you're willing to pay even more money. It says those people will walk away and curse him. He's got what I need. I'm willing to buy it, but he's greedy. He wants more money, so he's going to make me suffer so he can gain more money. They will curse that man. And of course, you can imagine he's not going to have much business. But it says, but blessings crown him who was willing to sell. Meaning he's willing, I will lose money, but you need what I've got. I'm willing to sell. I'm still going to make money, not as much, but I'm willing to sell. That man is going to be crowned with blessings. Wisdom is going to be pleased because you're considering other people and your financial gain, and you're going with other people. You got, do I want more financial gain, or do I want to do what's best for other people in my business? Well, if I'm harsh with people, I'll make more money. Wisdom says, you're coming down. But if you say, I can make money, but I'll be giving to the people and they'll be blessed also. Both are winning. The people are winning and I'm winning. Wisdom says, that's the way to do business. You're going to be rich. He who seeks good finds goodwill, but evil comes to him who searches for it. You want to cause trouble? You'll get it. Number 28, whoever trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will thrive like a green leaf. Notice righteous in your green leaf. That's setting up the next verse right here. You trust in your riches or the material things, and that's what you're promoting. It's not good. You will fall. But you trust in righteousness, you'll thrive like a green leaf. Now watch this. He who brings trouble on his family will inherit only when. How do you bring trouble on your family? Let's talk to fathers here. You bring trouble on your family by, one, abusing your power of authority. You bring trouble on your family by being greedy and wanting more money for yourself. and you neglect your family, you will inherit only wind. The way you treat your family today is going to depend on what the wind blows in tomorrow. You bring disaster on your family. You're selfish with your own possessions. You're selfish with your time. You abuse your power. When the wind blows in later on in a few years, it's not bringing the kids home. They're gone. They're not coming back. And the fool will be servant to the wise. Number 30, the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life. He who wins souls is wise. This verse is not talking about winning souls to the Lord in the sense of, well, I want another soul to the Lord. That's correct. You can say I want a soul to the Lord. I led someone to Christ. But that is not what this is talking about. The fruit of righteousness is a tree of life, and he who wins souls is wise. Winning souls in this verse, this word in the Hebrew, is used also for taking captives. It's used for bringing people over to your side. If you're righteous and you are a tree of righteousness and you know what is right and you understand wisdom and you go out and you captivate people with your thinking, just like that neighbor was sharing bad ideas over the fence, talking about bad philosophies, and with his mouth he destroys his neighbor. Now this is the reverse. If you are sharing righteousness by your lifestyle, with your words, and you're winning souls, people who say, well, they used to think this way. Maybe they were thought as a humanist, or they thought as an atheist, or they thought as some other form of anti-God. And they see you, they hear you, and you captivate them, and you capture them, bring them over to your side of righteousness in their thinking. He who wins souls is wise. Why? One, because that's God's mission. Number two, it's beneficial for you and your society. If you get more people thinking righteously, we're going to have a good society. If you let that fool keep talking over his fence, spreading his bad ideas, he's winning one soul at a time over their negative thinking. And it's a battle of ideas. Are you going to teach wisdom and win people to wisdom? Or are you going to let the fool talk and bring them over into perverse truth that is not absolute, that's being twisted? And your society, you'll be blessed as a society if you keep winning souls to righteousness. That's what that verse is talking about. And it says, number 31, our last one, my friends, if the righteous receive their due on the earth. And that's what this verse is talking about. God is planning on rewarding the righteous right here on earth. The righteous will have rewards in eternity, but even here on the earth. Jesus said that himself. He says you'll have multiplied your friends and your family and your possessions here on the earth by following righteousness. If that's true for the righteous, if you receive a harvest here on this earth because you're righteous, how much more the ungodly and the sinner? Their day is coming, not just in eternity, but the sinner's day is coming. Wisdom will not let them escape this world without reaping the harvest of their wickedness. It's the principles that's chapter 11. Thank you for your concentration. Use that. Think about it.